All right, if we have an orthogonal design, which means equal n in the conditions, so that if we actually correlate the effects with each other, they are unrelated to each other, that the main effects and the interactions ask statistically separate questions, then it's real easy to do the analysis because there aren't many surprises. And we're going to talk about doing those analyses using the LSD minimum mean difference approach, because I want you comfortable with using the computators to calculate those, because it is a really fast and often extremely accurate way of doing things. When I've gone through all of the homeworks that we're going to do in here in the last couple of days, and I've transitioned them from doing everything based on LSDs to doing everything based on the estimated means that you get out of SPSS, so far not one of the answers has changed. Each of the pairwise comparisons conducted in the simpler manner, which sort of assumes orthogonality, and the more proper manner, which adjusts to the non-orthogonality, 94 or 95 significance tests later, the two procedures have agreed every time. Even some that were sort of close. I had one that was a 0.06 and non-significant with this, a 0.08 and non-significant, a 0.04 and significant. So they're matching really, really well. And so I wouldn't recommend getting into a huge argument with somebody about how to do the follow-ups. If somebody that holds sway over you wants you to crank out the estimated means and the pairwise comparisons via SPSS, smile, wave, and go do it. Because it's unlikely that picking one procedure over the other is going to lead to bad mistakes. This is almost exactly the same script or sequence that we talked about with the 2x2. There are only two differences, and they're in green. You're still going to start out by reminding the researcher or the reader of the IVs and the DVs and show the data in a table or a figure. You're still going to describe whether or not the interaction is significant, and if it is significant, we're going to need some sort of follow-ups, because the rule for follow-ups is we need a follow-up whenever we have a significant effect with more than two conditions. An interaction has to have at least four conditions because the minimum factorial design is a 2x2. So every significant interaction is going to require some sort of follow-up. We then go on to determine whether or not the first main effect is significant. And if it is, we're going to use an LSD to compare if there's more than three marginal means. If there's only two, then it doesn't satisfy our rule. We only need a follow-up. We have a significant effect with more than two conditions. Whether that main effect is descriptive or misleading, if we have an interaction, we have to worry about whether that main effect is descriptive or misleading. Okay? We have to worry about the descriptiveness of any main effect, whether it's significant or not, if we have a significant interaction. Again, in the language that I carry around in my head, the trigger for worrying about main effects is whether or not the interaction is significant. Significant main effects can be misleading. Non-significant main effects can be misleading. What matters is the pattern of the interaction. And then last, we look at the second main effect, and if it's significant, we describe it, and if it has more than two conditions, we're going to need some sort of follow-up. And once again, if we have a significant interaction, we have to worry if that main effect is descriptive or misleading. This page is exactly the same page that we had for the 2x2, because the process doesn't particularly care whether it's a two-condition design or a multiple-condition design. It is still going to crank out a sums of squares for each main effect and for the interaction. And in an orthogonal design, those three are unrelated to each other. And there's a single error term that's used for all of the tests that we're going to apply to the data. So here's some more stuff on LSDs, because I want to have it written down so you can refer back to it. I like having stuff written down for you. General rule, you'll need an LSD minimum mean difference value to compare pairs of means whenever a significant effect has more than two conditions. So if the interaction is significant, we'll need an LSD to compare the cell means, to describe the pattern of the simple effects, to describe the pattern of the interaction. We'll also need that LSD minimum and mean difference to compare cell means, to describe the pattern of the simple effects to determine if the corresponding main effect is descriptive or misleading. So we're going to compare cell means to each other for two different purposes: to describe interaction patterns, and if we have an interaction pattern, to check up on main effect patterns, whether they're descriptive or misleading. And here's the new part of the rule that only gets applied when we have designs larger than a 2x2. Whenever a 3 or more group main effect is significant, we'll need an LSD for those marginal means to describe the pattern of that main effect. So, the simple rule and its applications in a larger factorial design. When we talk about the K-by-K LSD follow-ups, they're a little bit different. In the 2x2, we only have one LSD, and it's only used for comparing cell means. The K-by-K design uses the LSD for comparing cell means and marginal means, and here's the important part. Different LSD minimum mean difference values are computed for different effects. The different effects use the sample size differently. They use the statistical power differently. Since one of the things you compute, one of the things you use to compute an LSD minimum mean difference is sample size, we're going to have different sample sizes for different effects. So we're going to have different LSD minimum mean difference values for different effects. If an interaction is significant, then an LSD is computed to compare cell means, to describe simple effects and interactions. If a main effect with two conditions is significant, no LSD is needed. If a main effect with three or more conditions is significant, then the LSD is computed to compare the marginal means of that. Make sure you're using the right N. N needs to be the mean number of data points used to compute the means being compared. I'll show you examples. N needs to be the average number of data points representing each mean being compared. I probably should use the word average there instead of mean. You get too many means in one sentence, it gets angry. So here we have a design that's only slightly larger than the last one we looked at. We have males and females that are 5, 10, and 15. And there are all the cell and marginal means arrayed. We have, in this case, 5 different significance tests. We have the main effect for gender, which is going to compare these two means. We have the main effect F test for age, which is going to compare these three means. If that main effect for age is significant, we're going to need an LSD for making comparisons among these marginal means. We're going to have an F test for the interaction. And if the interaction is significant, we're going to need an LSD minimum mean difference for making comparisons among these cell means. There's a total of 15 effects in this study. And this is just using traditional simple effects. I'll tell you what I mean in a second. So if I want to look at the main effect of gender, then I want to compare these two marginal means, and I'm going to use this F-test. If that F-test has a p-value less than 0.05, those two means are different. That one's bigger than that one. Don't need any follow-up to tell us where to put one pointy. If we're interested in the main effect of age, we're going to be comparing these three marginal means. And to make that, we're going to use an omnibus F-test for age. And if it's significant, we then want to follow up by describing what is the pattern among those three. Now, if you want to be technical about it, if the main effect for age is significant, then we're pretty sure that these are going to be different. Because if there's a difference somewhere, it's most likely to be between the largest and the smallest mean. Our challenge will be understanding how this middle value fits into the pattern, and that's what the LSDs are for. If I want to know whether there's an interaction, I ask if there's an interaction. Asking if there's an interaction and finding a significant interaction then requires follow-ups. We then have to figure out what is the pattern of the interaction, and we've got two complete sets of simple effects. Here we have six analyses that allow us to look at the simple effect of age for each gender. So we have 5 versus 10-year-old males, 5 versus 15-year-old males, 10 versus 15-year-old females. Simple effect of age for males. Then we have 5 versus 10-year-old females, 5 versus 15-year-old females, 10 versus 15-year-old females. The simple effect of age for females. That's one way to describe the pattern of the interaction and what we would need to do to check up on the main effect of age. Then we've got the gender comparison for 5-year-olds, the gender comparison for 10-year-olds, and the gender comparison for 15-year-olds, and those give us the simple effect of gender for each age, which would be the alternative description of the interaction pattern, and what we would need to check up on the main effect of gender. What I want you to notice is that we now have more than one LSD. So let's work back through this, thinking about effects, the need for follow-ups, and if we have that follow-up, what's the sample size that's going to be used to calculate the LSD value? So we got 100 males and 100 females completed the task under instructions to work quickly, accurately, as quickly as possible without unnecessary errors or no instructions. I got an interaction p-value of 0.03. Do I have a significant interaction? Will I need to follow up? So I'm going to need to calculate an LSD minimum mean difference to compare cell means, right? Because I have a significant effect with more than two conditions. We're going to cling to that rule. That rule will serve us well for a long time. What will the N be? We're comparing cell means. So we are going to take our 200 sample size and spread that out across 8 conditions. If we spread 200 out across 8 conditions, what's our average sample size going to be? 25. Now, if we have a truly orthogonal design with 25 in each cell, it's really easy to argue to just plug in 25 and use it. If we didn't have equal N, then there are alternatives. We could calculate one LSD minimum mean difference and use it for all the possible comparisons among those cells. Or, as SPSS does, we can adjust that LSD minimum mean difference for the specific sample size in the particular cells being compared. And there's an argument, because the one is mathematically more accurate. If you have a smaller sample, you are taking a bigger risk when you say a 10-point difference is significant, right? A 10-point difference being called significant with 10 in each condition is riskier than a 10-point difference being called significant with 100 in each condition. And so some folks are happier adjusting that minimum mean difference for the particular sample size of the cells being compared. And that's what SPSS does. When you look, you will notice that the standard error is different for different pairwise comparisons, but always the same for a given pairwise comparison, and it corresponds with sample size. The other side of the argument says, what we have here are 8 estimates of the standard deviation in those groups. Not the sum of squares, which is tied to sample size, but the standard deviation, which is scaled across sample size. So what we're really taking away from those 8 cells is a standard deviation estimate. We're aggregating that standard deviation estimate and taking into account that that aggregate is based on 200 people spread across 4 estimates. And so, we should ignore differences in particular sample size because those do not impact our best estimate of the error term. What I can tell you is, when we got bored one spring break and ran, I think it was 10 million simulations, we had the IBM mainframe, the IBM 370. It was the last week it was going to be running. Nobody else had anything to do. We were bored at break, and we ran 10 million estimates with differential sample size and everything we could make that silly little computer do in the middle of the night. And we rarely found an interesting difference between the two unless we were right on the power line. If you're right on that power line, then the details of estimation can really matter. But for the most part, do your power analysis, aim at 80% power, add a couple, you'll be fine. There's also some very good work done by Jeff Loftus, Elizabeth Loftus' husband, who used to be a cognitive psychologist but kept getting into statistical arguments while publishing his cognitive research, and became more and more of a statistician the deeper he got into his career. And he's run a whole bunch of simulations that have reminded us that if you pay attention to more than type 1 error, if you recognize that there's this thing in the world called type 2 error, that this approach gives you the least total errors. So, part of the argument between people is what we're going to care about. And as soon as you allow two different groups to care about two different things, they're more likely to disagree about the one true way. All right. So, for the main effective instruction, I got a P of 0.02. Do I have a significant main effective instruction? Yes. You're really good at that one. Will I need an LSD minimum mean difference to compare the marginal means of the main effective instruction? Why? Significant effect with more than two conditions. What N will I use? Now I'm taking those 200 people and I'm spreading them across four marginal means. Those marginal means are estimated with greater power than the corresponding self means. Right? And so the N that I'm going to use here is going to be 200 divided by 4, which is going to be 50. Now, since we have a significant interaction, I have to worry about whether the pattern of those marginal means is descriptive for both males and females, or if it's potentially misleading. So after I'm done using the LSD based on an N of 50 to compare those four marginal means, I have to go back to using the original orange LSD based on an N of 25 and make the comparisons four males and four females. Now, can you see the hazard here? We're going to verify the pattern of the main effect among the marginal means by looking at the simple effect among the cell means using a less powerful test. Oops. Which can, in the worst possible circumstances, lead to a main effect that isn't anywhere. I'm sorry, I should say an interaction that isn't anywhere. Okay? You want to be careful that you don't get patterns of data that are caused by differential power. And let me remind you, the most annoying of these is when you get this pattern of data. When you have a significant interaction, but your follow-ups show no simple effect here nor there. At that point, you have to go with this telling you there's a difference because we have a bit of a disconnect here. This is testing whether this 10-point difference in this direction is different than this 10-point difference in the other direction. The LSD follow-ups are only asking if this 10-point difference is significant and if this 10-point difference is significant. The follow-ups are not mathematically equivalent to the omnibus test. And when we're making this comparison, let me jigger this around a little bit. Let's make this 10, this 20, and this 20, and this 35. So this is 35. You might find that smaller mean difference is significant, and this larger mean difference is not significant because of differential power. It's more likely to happen the deeper the stack. Because now the power of this test is based on 7 times the n of the power of each of these. Okay? So, just a reminder that it's the overall test that should drive what we think we see. And that our follow-ups, whether we're using the full model error term like the LSD, or we're using separate model error terms like SPSS is nice and calculates for us, taking each sample size into account. You've got differential power on the follow-ups than on the omnibus test. Weird shit can happen. For the main effect of gender, I've got P of 0.02, so I've got a significant main effect of gender, but warning, 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 trick question, warning, warning. Do I need an LSD minimum mean difference to compare the marginal means for males and females? Why not? Now, that's true when I'm working with an orthogonal design. When I'm using a non-orthogonal design, what I have to remember is that neither this main effect nor this main effect is testing the marginal means that we've calculated from the cell means. If we have a non-orthogonal design, which we're about to start looking at, then the F-tests are tests of the estimated marginal mean differences. The effect of that IV controlling for the other IV in the interaction. Why can't this be simple like regression? It's exactly the same as regression. The thing that we get away with is in regression, all we do is look at the effect, not the things that add up to the effect. Here, the effect is a mean difference, and so we look at both means. And that's where shit gets interesting. So let me go show you the example using SPSS and the LSD. Nothing's different. We've got a dependent variable and 2 independent variables. We ask for the descriptive statistics. When it gives you that table, and here we have praise, criticism, or silence as the response when they're trying a task. They're randomly assigned either a simple or a complex task. I really recommend that you pull the information out of the table the way SPSS gives it to you and put it into that draw the boxes sort of table that we use. That'll prevent silly mistakes. We have the ANOVA table that gives us a significance test for each main effect and for the interaction. We have a significant interaction, so we're going to be interested in calculating an LSD minimum mean difference. And I want to point out that it's going to be based on an N of 5, because 5 is how many we have in each condition. We crank out that LSD minimum mean difference, and we use it to compare cell means to describe the pattern of the interaction. When praise is used, simple on complex or significant. When criticism is used, simple is performed better than complex. When silence is used, there's no difference. That is one interaction pattern looking at the simple effect of type of task for each reinforcer. We can use exactly the same LSD minimum mean difference to compare exactly the same set of cell means, but instead looking at the simple effect of reinforcement. for simple tasks. Praise is equal to criticism. Criticism does better than silence, and praise does better than silence. Whereas for complex tasks, praise does better than criticism. Criticism is equal to silence. Praise is better than silence. Which pattern we use depends on how we stated the research hypothesis. We also have a significant main effect of reinforcement. And we have three reinforcement conditions, so we're going to need an LSD minimum mean difference to compare those marginal means. That's going to be based on 10, because now we're taking our 30 total people and we're spreading them across three conditions to look at that main effect. And so when we plug in the different sample size, we get a smaller minimum mean difference for the main effect than for the interaction. That's what you should find every time. If you don't find that, check. When we look at this, we're able to describe the pattern among the marginal means that overall praise does better than criticism. Criticism is equal to silence, and praise does better than silence. We then want to compare the main effect pattern with the simple effect patterns for simple and complex tasks, at which point we realize that this is only descriptive for complex tasks. It's not descriptive for simple tasks. So we want to be careful when we talk about what's going on here. Last but not least, we have a significant main effect of task. That main effect of task is straightforward because there's only two conditions. When we look at simple and complex tasks, we know these two are significantly different. So people do better at simple than they do at complex overall, or at the margins, or on average. Because we have an interaction, we have to carefully check whether that's true for all three kinds of reinforcement, and we see that it's true only for one of the three. So we want to be really careful about describing interaction or main effect patterns when we have an interaction. Darn it. Whether because of careful, intentional, stratified sampling to match subpopulation proportions, or because of sampling exigencies, which is polite for whatever the hell we could get, many of our factor designs have unequal n, resulting in non-orthogonality, collinearity, or correlation among our effects. Either way, we have to be certain our variance partitioning, significance tests, and interpretations properly line up. Just wanted to write down for you what are the three types of sum of squares, cleverly called 1, 2, and 3. The type 1 sum of squares is a hierarchical construction of a model. Whatever is put in first gets to account for as much variance as it can. Whatever is put in second is controlled for what was put in first. Whatever is put in third is controlled for everything else. The variance left over from that is considered error variance. Type 2 and type 3 sums of squares are both the same idea. Every effect is controlled for every other effect. The difference between them, most often, is that the type 2 sum of squares is a main effects model. Each main effect is there and is controlled for the other, what we're used to seeing in regression. That'll change, but what we're used to seeing in regression at this point. The type 3 sum of squares grew up more out of the ANOVA model, which then has the interaction. But again, every effect is controlled for every other effect. So A is controlled for B in the interaction. B is controlled for A in the interaction. The interaction is controlled for each of the main effects. Everything left over is called error. And the type 3 is the most commonly used for non-orthogonal factorial designs. In fact, you have to work pretty hard to change it. And weird shit happens in SPSS if you give it an interaction and ask it to do a type 2 sums of squares. I got playing the other night, and I'm still not entirely sure what it did. But don't do that. All right. This is the written down version of what we talked about before. the more you hear it, the more sense it makes. Which is why there'll be a study question about this, so we can talk about it again, and you have to have some part of it packed into your head at some point. This is likely to be one of those things that you memorize it, might even perform well with it, might even pull it out of your ass in public and pontificate and impress somebody, and eventually it'll really make sense. There is just this emotional disconnect between regression, where we're totally comfortable controlling everything for everyone else, and regression where that sort of makes sense, but please don't change any means. Because if you're changing a means, just... In multiple regression, the collinearity among predictors is caused by the relationship among the constructs and is expected to replicate across samplings from the same population, setting, and task stimulus. If you draw the same sample in the same situation, you expect to get the same collinearities, and they're driven by the relationships among the variables. That just makes sense. However, for factorial designs, the collinearity among the effects is determined by the relative cell sample sizes. So unless there has been explicit stratified sampling, the collinearity among the effects is happenstance, which I like better than chance, because we use chance to mean lots of other things. Here I just mean shit happens. Rather than reflecting the relationship among the constructs, that's where the complexity begins. Collinearity is now not collinearity. It's produced by something we do, how we sample each of our cells. Said differently, the effects confound each other differently depending upon what the relative cell sample sizes happen to be. In other words, confounding varies with sample size. We've never had this before. Okay? The collinearity was never a function of sample size. By using type 3 sums of squares, correcting each effect for the happenstance collinearity it has with the others, we hope, replicate the same corrected effects regardless of the collinearity among the effects that's caused by whatever our relative sample sizes are. The whole reason for type 3 sums of squares is that it is supposed to give us the greatest generalizability in our results. So that if you run an orthogonal design and five others of us run five different non-orthogonal designs with different numbers of happenstance people in the different cells, the corrected effects are more likely to be consistent than the uncorrected effects. That's what it boils down to. Whether those effects are caused by peculiarities in measurement or peculiarities in sample size, the whole idea is that we're getting the unique contribution of this controlling for the others. That's supposed to give us greater generalizability and greater stability. The cell means and non-orthogonal factor designs. Cell means are calculated, analyzed, and interpreted the same in orthogonal and non-orthogonal designs. So the analysis and interpretation of simple effects are the same in orthogonal and non-orthogonal designs. Okay? The highest order terms, which is the cell means, are inviolate. Collinearity doesn't affect them. Marginal means. Now we have three freaking kinds of marginal means. Sorry. We have the unweighted marginal means. That's what you get if you just take the average of the cell means and ignore sample size. And it probably doesn't represent a damn thing. You have the weighted marginal means, which are computed as the average of the corresponding cell means weighted by the differential sample size. That's what shows up as descriptives. The estimated marginal means are marginal means estimated from the model using the EM mean significance testing process. Weighted marginal means are the best estimate of the mean of the population represented by the aggregate of the corresponding cell means because of the weighting. Okay? If you've got stratified sampling, weighted means give you a more accurate estimate. That's why we have stratified sampling. However, as we've discussed, you must be very careful when producing and interpreting these marginal means, because as an aggregate, they might not actually represent the population. What's the average of men and women? What's the average of 10-year-olds and 5-year-olds? Also, and pay attention, the weighted marginal means represent the difference between the groups including the confounding of that group difference by the other main effect in the interaction. And that's the part that hurts. The main effect, marginal means, those just two happy little numbers sitting there, one for boys and one for girls, when they come to you, they are already confounded. Because they're made up of cell means, and those cell means are boys in one condition and boys in the other condition into boys overall. So those marginal means are confounded. Damn it. Just like, if we ignored the second IV and just ran an ANOVA on men and women, it'd still be confounded. Right? And the marginal means in the factorial design are the same as the only means in the two-condition study. They're confounded. Our only hope is to unconfound them using a non-orthogonal analysis and corrected mean comparisons. Said differently, the difference between the weighted marginal means is like a simple correlation. It represents the bivariate relationship between the DV and that IV without regard to how that relationship is confounded by other variables. And that's the part that's conceptually difficult, is wrapping your head around the idea that those means come to you confounded. Just like if we had just the average for males and the average for females, we know that's confounded by a whole bunch of stuff. We would never causally interpret that. But once that's part of a factorial design, we get a little squirrely about cause, and we look at those marginal means, and we go, oh, real men, real women, real means. No, still confounded by all the other shit that's out there. All right. We will talk about this again, talk about it some more, and then look at examples on Friday. Okay? There's no reason to hurry through this, and reps are our friends. Just try and get comfortable with the idea that a regression weight is a mean difference between groups. Now, we're going to show you that in great detail later. But if we think about a regression weight as a mean difference, then we expect there to be a different mean difference, whether or not we're taking other things into account. Okay? So, marginal means are like correlations, not taking other things into account. Estimated marginal means are like regression weights, taking other things into account. We do it because it gives us our greatest interpretability and our greatest generalizability. We'll just get you comfortable with it in stages. Thanks.